Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all in chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 4th day of May. May the 4th be with you. Anno Domini 2019, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
And you had some good ones this week.
Yeah, they were fun this week.
Yeah.
I should also mention today is the anniversary of the Kent State shooting. Not as much fun as May the 4th, but yeah. That's okay. Star Wars Day. all right. Yeah, today was very cool. Modern gamers may snooze at the thought of playing solitaire, but Microsoft's take on the classic card game helped usher in the casual gaming market, according to the Strong's National Museum of Play. On Thursday, the Video Game Hall of Fame inducted a familiar computer game, Microsoft Solitaire. The game joins...
One good thing out of Solitaire.
Yeah, right, out of Microsoft. The game joins Mortal Kombat, Super Mario Kart, and the text-based title Colossal Cave Adventure. That was my favorite. As the latest inductees to the Strong's World Video Game Hall of Fame. Modern gamers may snooze at the thought of playing solitaire, but for old-school PC users, Microsoft Solitaire was a go-to game in the 90s when free-to-play software was sparse. Solitaire's easy-to-learn mechanics also helped pave the way for the casual gaming market, according to the Strong's National Museum of Play. And let's not forget everybody's favorite excuse for playing. It sharpened your mousing skills. The game proved that sometimes analog games can be even more popular in the digital world and demonstrated that a market existed for games that appeal to people of all types, said the Strong's assistant vice president, Jeremy Saucier. And I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I apologize, Jeremy. However, I butchered your name. I'm sorry.
Saucer.
So, is it Saucer?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Depends if he likes the French word or not.
Right. Or saucier. Maybe he's just saucier.
Yeah.
I hope the person I'm talking about is not listening.
Oh, I think they're not.
Microsoft Solitaire debuted in 1990 on Windows 3.0 as a free title. Mr. Saucier, sir, Jeremy, if you're listening, call in and tell us how to pronounce your name. Microsoft Solitaire debuted in 1990 on Windows 3.0 as a free title bundled with the operating system. A company intern named Wes Cherry developed it because the Windows OS had no real games at the time. In an interview in 2017, Cherry said he wasn't paid a cent to create the game, even though it quickly became a popular distraction for office workers. At one point, he even created a special key that would allow the player to switch between the game and a spreadsheet. The panic key, I remember that.
We called it the boss key.
The boss key. Made it look like you were doing real work.
A spreadsheet.
Yeah, a spreadsheet. It brought up a spreadsheet. It made it look like you were doing real work, but Microsoft made me take it out, he said. According to Microsoft, people in more than 200 markets still play at Microsoft Solitaire today, despite all the current computer game offerings. Which leads me to the question, how did they know? Anyway, there's no poll this week because I'm still evaluating alternatives, but when was the last time you played Solitaire? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And all the different programs that Microsoft did, you know, besides Windows, the different, you know, like when they tried to do a comparable QuickBooks type of thing.
Right.
You know, all these other things that they've done. Thing that they get noted for. Solitaire.
And I'll tell you what, it is still popular.
Oh,
lots
yeah.
of people. There's lots of this week, because of that, I looked up Solitaire on the Chrome Play Store.
Yep.
And on the Android store.
Yep.
And there's dozens and dozens of versions of Solitaire. Most of them contain ads. There are a couple of free ones.
But I can remember back in the day when that came out, I'd have to go into different companies and they would have me literally take it off the computers because so many folks would spend hours sitting there, one more game, Mm-hmm. One more game.
And I got seven away from winning. I can play next time I'll win.
Yeah.
That's kind of not how it
works.
And
they kept playing and playing. So, yeah, I can remember I had to go. And then folks got really upset.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
Where did my solitaire go? Yeah. I had to take it off. Why? I was told to.
Yeah.
Right. Ooh.
One place where my wife used to work, they had monitoring software installed. And so word came down from the bosses that, you know, people are playing solitaire too much, so we're going to come around and delete it. And Shirley told me about one person that renamed the solitaire.exe to msword.exe. And apparently they missed his machine.
Yeah, that's all you'd have to do is simply rename the
right, because back in the day it was just the file.
Yeah.
Now, of course, it's all linked into the registry and things and this and that, and it's all
more ticks and ties.
Right.
Also inducted this year was The Colossal Adventure, which came on cassette tape.
Oh, yes.
I like some of the pictures they have on their website.
Oh, yes. I played Colossal Cave Adventure many, many times on many different machines. It's a text adventure. For you younger folks, text is something that hides behind the graphics that you see. The pictures were the best because they were all in your head. Yep. They were full color, full resolution.
Infocom, what was it? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was one of the first video game, well, text adventure games before text video games. And it came with the scratch and sniff card. It came with your Jugenta 2000 peril sensitive sunglasses.
The first scratch and sniff adventure, however, was Leather Goddesses of Phobos.
I had that one too.
Yep. I had the poster. I never played the game, but we sold it. And then and when we were done with it, I took home the poster.
I love how that one opened. You wake up with a sense of urgency in your bladder.
Yes.
And depending on whether you go into the men's room or the ladies' room, sets the whole rest of the game because that sets your gender.
Yep.
So you don't even have an assumed gender.
Remember Leisure Suit Larry?
Oh, yes.
In the land of the lounge lizards.
Yep.
Wow. I had that one.
Yep. I played a bunch of the Zork games that were text adventures. And in fact, you can get for pretty much every operating system a Zork interpreter. So, and there are places online where you can download those original games and continue to play them.
Zork Remember Online. The other one? Minesweeper.
Minesweeper, yeah.
Minesweeper, sure.
Yeah. I would set a 100x100 grid with one mine in it.
Yeah.
I could win that one.
Yeah.
But the really annoying thing is sometimes I still lost. Yeah.
That would really tick me off. You put one mine in and your first pick.
Yep.
Right. You get blown.
A lot of these old games are available at the Internet Archive, archive.org. I should put a link up. Because what's interesting is they were the limits of computing technology, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, and now you can play them in a web browser on your phone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because
right.
that has so much more power now.
And the graphics of nowadays programs.
Yep.
Right.
I mean, you look like at Fortnite and some of these others, and it's like we were happy with, you know, some of these others that we had that were so flat and, you know, unbelievably different. Yep.
What I find interesting is that you can win theoretically, given the way the game is played on Microsoft Solitaire, where you can move stuff from the. Where the aces are, and I forget what they call that, back down to the tableau, down there, and turning three at a time, you can win between 82% and 91.5% of your games. I am nowhere near that win ratio. Somewhere along down the line, I've got a whole bunch of games I'm going to win in a row.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
I remember one solitaire game I had at one time. There was an always winnable checkbox in the preferences. So it would stack the deck so you could win.
Oh, nice.
And when I didn't win, it was so upsetting. So what did I play wrong that I didn't win?
Oh, because you could, right, because you'd set it to
You still
to
have
win.
To play the right cards in the right order. But
Right. All right, we should probably get to the phones. Poor Dave from Brighton has been waiting patiently. Hi, Dave. Were you waiting patiently?
I am waiting patiently.
All right, thank you. We'll get to you now. How are you, Dave?
I'm good, and you guys?
Peachy, thanks. What's up?
Well, I was visiting a friend out in Illinois, and I know in the past you've helped people with disabilities, and he has challenges, and he has a piece of software. His wife called it Words Plus, and it doesn't seem to be working well on his laptop now. She attributes part of it to Windows 10, and we can get to that. But for him to communicate, he has to hit a clicker.
Yeah.
And it takes about 5 or 6 strokes per character. And this doesn't seem, his Words Plus, I don't know whether it's not being supported anymore. Are you familiar with any place I could point her to look for maybe a replacement piece of software?
I don't know where you would get a replacement for that particular piece of software off the top of my head. There's QuickTalker, but that's, I think, from the same company. That's all from AbleNet, isn't it? Yeah, no, no.
Mm-hmm.
We have a friend named Pete Boulay who's been very involved in that stuff, and I will reach out to Pete and see if he has, or if Pete's listening, you can call in and tell us what you know about Word Plus and what would replace that, or if indeed it needs to be replaced.
Okay. Now, once again, she kind of attributed part of the problem to Windows 10 and his laptop. I don't think it's online, so I don't think it would have some of the security problems. But is there any way to go back to an earlier version? Would they make exemptions for people with disabilities or not?
Microsoft doesn't, no. You can certainly find online copies of Windows 7, or if you still have a disk around somewhere, and you could certainly put it on your computer. But again, that's very dangerous if you're ever, ever going to go online. But if you have an old machine that does not go online at all, you can use that. But you got to be really, really careful.
Right. Well, once again, I think he just uses it for communication. So that's how he communicates with the outside world. So I don't think he goes online with it.
Right, right, right. So you could do that. You might also find, words, son of a gun.
Do you know if it's the plus symbol or the word plus?
Is it words plus symbol or words dash?
Yeah, when I looked it up, it's words plus.
Yeah, but is that a plus sign or the word plus spelled out?
Well, it's, the one I see right now, it says words with the plus sign. And it's just got a very rudimentary page and describes how, you know, it works with the Stephen Hawking and stuff like that. So.
Right, right, right.
There's no other information other than that, you know, very rudimentary.
Right, that's what I'm seeing. Yeah. Words-plus.com is simply a non-existent place, and yep. Words Plus with the plus sign, Inc., is very, very rudimentary.
Right.
I just found one. It's interesting. The website is words-plus, but the text on the page is words with a plus sign.
Yeah.
And a phone number to call.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it. It certainly can't hurt to give them a call.
Yeah, I think she's working with him, but I was, you know, wondering if there were other, you know, alternatives, places that she might look.
Well, I
so
know.
If your source calls in, you're on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll give her the connection to that. So hopefully we can help her that way.
Well, I know even in Microsoft Word, in the Windows 10 itself, they have added a lot of disability services. So, mm-hmm. So there might be something built into the OS you could use.
Now, is this so that your friend can simply like speak and it puts the text in a document or what?
He can't speak.
Okay, so this is something where he has to click on an online keyboard or that sort of fare.
He's got kind of like a clicker.
Right, 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 right.
It's connected.
Right. No, you're at this. Honestly, that's a little beyond our.
Okay.
Our expertise. I'm afraid your best bet is to give the folks the call there.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thought I'd give it a try. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
And again, please, if anybody listening has experience with something along the lines of Word Plus.
Why not? Might want to give APVI a call.
That's a good idea.
You know, and APVI might have other solutions that they could maybe steer them to, because they've got a whole educational department there for adaptive living.
Right.
And Kim was there. I'm going back quite a few years, but they could give different recommendations to maybe help him out.
Right. Perfect. Good idea. Yep. ABVI is a good choice. The Association for Blind and Visually Impaired, mm-hmm. ABVI.
Right there at 500 South Clinton.
Yep. So if I'm sure Dave is still listening, you'll be able to give them a call, and they should be able to help. The problem has always been that computers and operating systems, for the most part at least, have been designed by people who are not in any way physically challenged. And so they've made them, and that's, of course, the way the world works. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the issue most people with challenges face, is the fact that the world was designed for people who don't have challenges.
Well, the other thing, too, though, is Dave might be able to help his friend out. Again, the other thing that ABVI does, and I know this for a fact, is they'll help if there are other alternatives
right.
to that. They might help him find the other alternatives to that particular situation that he's in. And who knows? I mean, I'm just guessing, but he might be able to even qualify for some training and that type of stuff.
Right.
You know, for that.
And depending on where he lives in Illinois, there may be an ABVI type.
Yep.
Depending on the there.
Yeah. Check with their local organization there. And who knows, with funding and everything else, you know, he might, you know, be able to help him out more than he realizes.
Right. But
a lot of folks there just don't know, like you say, the sources to go to check this all out. They know they have a need.
Right.
There's not, you know, some phone book that you just open up.
Right. How do you find them if you don't know who they are?
Yeah.
Theoretically, whoever your health professionals are should be able to direct you to that. But
yeah, sometimes they're so
sometimes not.
Yeah, and overwhelmed with so much going on in that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've seen that happen before.
Yep. But yeah, it's we need more of that sort of thing. More of the. Understanding, I guess, awareness
mm-hmm.
that not every. It's one of the things that I find when I talk to people about doing web design. You know, is your website friendly to people who have visual impairments?
Mm-hmm.
And most people just kind of look at you like, meh? Okay.
Yeah, like you got a third eye.
Right, right. Yep. But in fact, if your website is not friendly to people with visual impairments, you're missing out on a significant portion of your audience.
Yeah.
And many of the social media things, I think I remember reading Twitter just added an alt text field. So many people right. are posting photos online, and that, you know, does no good to someone with low visibility. But in many cases, there's an alternate text field. When you're posting your photo, you can type in a description of the photo for people that may have low visibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and in almost every operating system has text-only browsers, right? So Lynx, for example, LYNX or LINKS. There are actually two of them, but Lynx is a text-only browser that you can. WebIE is a text-only browser. Elynx is a text-only browser. There's a bunch of them out there, and you should download, if you are a web developer, you need to download one of those and run your website against it. If you can't navigate your website in a text-only browser, then you are abandoning a significant portion, and face it, as people get older, a growing portion of your possible audience.
How about those websites where they're just one giant, you must install Flash button?
Yeah, well, those are done anyway next year, so.
Yeah.
One thing that's starting to really annoy me and talk about different designers is, you know, they might have a video up there to watch, say like a DIY,
right,
or whatever. It could be anything. And right in the middle of it, all of a sudden they break for an ad.
Yep. Oh yes.
It's an interstitial.
I go right on by it. I says, you know.
Well, a lot of times the person that uploaded that video has no control over that.
Right, because if they put it on YouTube or whatever, Google may monetize that.
So enough people were skipping past all the pre-roll video, so now they do an interstitial ad.
Right.
Yeah. No, the minute that breaks in the middle, like I was watching, they were doing something in wood carving. And right in the middle of it, they break for this stupid ad. I blew right on by it. I'm not watching those. I hate that.
A lot of times you can tell when the ad starts, the video starts, those yellow dots in the timeline. Those yellow dots are the ad breaks.
I noticed those just
recently. Yeah, they go in seemingly randomly right in the middle of a sentence.
Right.
For people who are uploading videos, if you make a break for the ad to go in, right, then it won't be as jarring to your readers.
Right. The other thing about text-only browsers is if you're on a slow internet connection, it obviously does not download the graphics, which means that particularly a graphics-heavy site.
Oh, you're forgetting.
I do a lot of browsing text-only because I watch a lot of, I go to a lot of news sites.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them don't work in text-only browsers, but it also means that I don't get the auto-starting video and then as you scroll down, it jumps to be in the corner.
Or
in the middle of the text sometimes because they were stupid.
You can't find the close button.
There's no close button.
Oh, TV Guide does that. If you turn to TV Guide, they all say, bam, I just want to look up when a show's coming on. Boom, right there. It's like, don't turn the stupid thing off. I don't want it.
That's right. And it's that old game of leapfrog, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've talked about this before. I have ads on my website, but if you use an ad blocker, I don't get my 10,000th of a penny when you view that ad. But because so many people are using ad blockers, they're now using different ways to get the ads in, and then they block that, and then they use another way, and eventually it's just going to be, giant sound video thing happening all over. And in fact, Google, hypocrites that they are, because most of those ads are coming from Google, also now allow you to not autoplay video when you go to a website. And, and the thing they did that I bless them for every day is they now at the top put in a little speaker for the tab that's playing.
Safari added that too.
Yeah.
So you can see what one of your 100 tabs open is playing that stupid music and make
exactly
it stop.
Right. That's exactly
and
right.
And the browsers are all, Chrome and Firefox and Safari are now stopping autoplay anyway.
Right.
Because everyone is so now the advertisers.
It doesn't always work.
Doesn't always work. Yep. Some advertisers have figured out a way around it. So it's that cat and mouse game where, in fact, we were talking about that last week that all the pop up ads we used to see, and there was a whole industry in selling pop up blockers.
Yep.
Until the browsers added pop up blocking, so now there's pop under ads.
Right.
You close the last window you thought you had, and there's ads underneath it.
Right.
And those are not pop ups, so your pop up blocker won't.
That's right. That's exactly right. But it's I think important if you are a web developer to pay attention to the needs of the visually impaired. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenik, Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. On Wednesday, Google announced that it will now allow users to automatically delete the old location history, as well as web history that its services usually save. This will be done using the newly added feature called Auto Delete that lets you delete location history and app and web activity. Currently, users have to manually delete the location data and web history or turn it off for good to prevent Google services from storing data. Now, users will be able to inform Google about the information they want to delete by specifying a certain period, such as, what, 3 months or whatever, on an ongoing basis. In this way, users will be able to enjoy more control over information they'd like to keep private, such as the location and web history data. This can be regarded as a step in the right direction as it shows Google's determination to ensure maximum user privacy. Google services offer a location history feature. If it is turned on, the company will be able to track all the locations that the user visits. The web and app activity can keep track of websites that user visits or the apps that are in use. Previously, users could either disable these features or manually delete the data, but now with the addition of the auto-delete feature, data management will become automated. Choose a time limit for how long your activity data can be saved, 3 or 18 months, and any data older than that will be automatically deleted from your account on an ongoing basis, said Google in its blog post. Pay attention to this part. The new feature will be available in the coming weeks. So please don't call and ask us today how to install it or how to activate it, because it's not available yet. It will be coming in the next few weeks, according to the announcement made by Google. The company further states this is only the first such move in enhancing user control over the services it offers. So do you actually care about being tracked by Google? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
It is a little disconcerting when you go back in your places list and it knows where you visited. I'm watching my trip that I just took, and it knows I stopped at a rest area because I was there for more than 5 minutes.
Yep.
But they started a couple months ago, there was a big uproar over the location tracking data, that there are so many places, especially in Android, with any Google services, where you can turn tracking on and off.
Right.
And if you turn it off in one place, that doesn't turn it off anywhere else.
Right.
So people that thought they were turning off their location tracking may have been turning it off for one service, you know, your text messaging.
Right.
But it didn't turn it off for other services like mapping.
Right. And now it will be universal. And a lot of people actually use the service because you can create a group, for example, and you know then they can see where you are. So let's say you go to your family or a meeting that you go to all the time, and people can see where you are. You're going to lunch with somebody, they can see how far out you are, that sort of thing. And a lot of people like that. They use it a lot, but they don't want Google to save those data forever. So by setting a limit as to how long that those data can be kept, they get the benefits of using those friendly tracking things, and then don't have to worry about the other folks. So,
a few weeks ago, I started getting email reminding me that my location tracking was turned on.
Yep,
and showing me a little map. Here's all the places you went. But the thing is, sometimes they're wrong. That you may have not gone to that place. In fact, I'm looking at one now. It says I went to this a gym. It obviously doesn't know me. I was really at the movie theater across the street.
Right, right.
So
close enough.
Well, this comes into when we hear all these stories about police are requesting GPS data, and you know, say there was a robbery at that gym, and suddenly you're a suspect because your GPS data said you were at that gym.
And well, at least you know you're safe.
Yeah.
You're over
so
at a movie.
The officer look at me. Do I go to a gym?
Right.
I wave at it as I drive by. But that's...
With one finger.
Yeah. But that's part of the privacy concern, is that a lot of this stuff may not be right. And the potential for abuse and misuse is very high as well.
Yeah. I'm a Google guide. That is to say, I put reviews for various things and take pictures and do all that stuff. And every once in a while, they ask me, "Were you here?" And I have to think, "What?" And so I go look it up. And, oh yeah, I was. I was next door, or I was down the street, or I dropped Elaine off, so I stopped.
Stopped long enough for it to trigger.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I get asked a lot about places like the Christmas Store and Michael's and, you know, like that. And then I was in the parking lot reading, but I was not in the store.
There's a gas station chain in the South called Wawa.
Wawa.
And we always got a kick out about, let's go to Wawa next to Piggly Wiggly.
Yeah, exactly. there were a lot of really interesting things in this week's news, but they were rumors. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I don't do news items about rumors.
Rumors, yeah.
Because, you know, you hear Apple rumors all the time. The next Apple Watch will be $42 and embed itself in your thing. Yeah, I don't care. Let's wait till we get a real thing.
There was an interesting non-rumor that Apple commented on. So I don't know if you talked about this while I was gone. 2 years ago, Apple announced the AirPower charging mat.
Yes.
That you could,
we didn't get to it. It was one of my stories, and
today?
We didn't get to No.
Oh, then, yeah. So it would charge three devices at once, your iPad, your iPhone, and your Apple Watch. Each device needed different charging rates and a different charging, you know, technology. The watch is magnetic, not inductive. And so it was a really cool thing. 2 years have gone, almost 2 years have gone by. And we still don't see it. It's in Apple's documentation. When you get, you know, a new wireless chargingable device, a new iPhone, it says you can use the AirPower charger. Apple officially canceled the project, saying that it couldn't meet their own high standards. Some of the stories we were hearing from behind the scenes is like 30 different coils in it, because one of the things they wanted to do is they wanted it not to matter where you put down your thing.
Right.
So each of the three things that use a different charging rate, you could put it on any piece of the pad. Rather than this spot is for your phone, this spot is for your...
Yeah.
Segment. Which means if you think about it, that thing's got to cost at least three times what you would normally expect to pay because it's got three times the electronics in it, plus whatever they need to say, oh, it's this.
Yep.
So there's a sensing device in there as well.
And they were having thermal issues where it was running too hot. They were having EM issues where it just put out so much electromagnetic interference that there were apparently medical devices that were having trouble with it. So they officially canceled it. And it's one of the very few times that a product was announced and never shipped from Apple. We hear all kinds of rumors about things that Apple is working on that never get released. Mm. But this is one that Apple officially announced and then officially canceled before it ever shipped. Some things get shipped and then discontinued, but this. So we're a little sad about having a multi-charging pad if you have multiple devices. Well, now the biggest thing that might even replace the need for a multi-charging pad is you can use one device to charge another device.
Oh, yeah. I saw an ad for that.
Yeah. So you set your tablet down on the charging pad. It charges. Then you set your phone on top of the tablet.
Yep. It'll charge that,
It charges through, yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't need a multi-charging pad because one pad can charge
multiple devices.
Yeah.
Right. Assuming they all use the same technology.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you can't do your Apple Watch because that is magnetic.
Yep.
Right. No, I get that. I originally wasn't going to talk about this at all because, again, it was just a rumor. But Google has been... The rumor has been that there will be... We've got the Pixel 2, and the Pixel 3. There's now going to be a Pixel 3A. And it's going to be a mid-level phone. You know, the Pixel 3 and 3A, or the Pixel 3 and 3XL are like $800 and $1,000. The Pixel 3A and the Pixel 3A XL are going to be in the $400 and $500 range.
Because the Pixel 4 is going to be the new flagship phone.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't going to talk about it because it was a rumor, but apparently, well, and of course, next week is Google I/O, their WWDC, essentially, and
people have pictures of the boxes.
What happened was somebody put them on the shelf in a Best Buy in Illinois.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oops.
Because they probably got a box of them to sell next week when they're announced at Google I/O.
Right, and it's a Best Buy, and sometimes the people who were there last week were asking, do you want fries with that? And they saw it on the shelf and thought, oh, this should be out there, and put it out there.
Hey, is that going to sell back here?
Yep. So it looks like it's going to be a very cool thing. And of course, now I don't know what's going to happen at Google I.O. You know, yes. It's like, let us announce the horseless carriage because nobody knows what that's like.
There have been Apple announcements where somebody leaked something. There was one of the video card makers said in it, and it's used in the new Mac. Steve Jobs canceled the Mac release.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want someone else to pre-announce his.
Well, if they've already got it in boxes and at the stores, they're not going to. Yeah, they're not going to be at the point where you're going to say we're not going to announce that anymore. We're going to trash 100 million devices, but it's a little bit lower powered than the Pixel 3, and by a little bit I mean a little bit. It's got the same night sight 12 megapixel super camera that's on the Pixel 3. And it, you know, you'll get 3 years of updates and free unlimited photo storage and yada yada.
How's the screen size on it?
It's bigger. It's 5.5 or 6 inches from what I remember. It's very it, you know, again, I wasn't going to say a word about it, but it actually showed up in a Best Buy,
literally on the shelf.
So
I wonder if he's still working there.
Well, yeah, exactly, and it's I'm looking forward to seeing what it's like. I'm very happy with my Pixel. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm going to jump, but at $500, I'm much more likely to jump than I am at $1,000.
Heck yeah, I'd get two of them for that.
Right, right.
Well, most people only look at the $50 a month and don't realize that that's 2 years.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. But you know, I will say that I am particularly thrilled by having a pure Android experience, and not having all the bloatware that you get with other things.
Yeah, that was the one thing that sold me. As a matter of fact, you know, it's one of the stories is my old phone.
You're seven.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll get to that.
Yeah, that's
one.
An old one. You know, another item we'll talk about after news item. But no, that was the. And that's why I'm so glad, because when I did have to go in to turn in my phone, you know, of course, the one sales, oh, no, you got to turn it in. And the other sales lady there said, was the one that pulled me aside, and she goes, Dave, because, you know, I've dealt with her quite a bit. She goes, no, wait another week. She goes, the Pixel phone. She goes, I'm hearing great stuff about it. I think you're really going to like that one instead. All right, well, hey, the phone was not acting up for me, but this other idiot there was sitting there thought, you know, it was going to burst out in flames and I was going to be torched and everything else. And it was the best decision I did, because I turned that phone on and it's like, wait a minute, I'm not seeing much on the screen.
Yeah.
Oh, because I got to put on it what I want, not what they decided that they were going to throw on there, whether you like it or not.
And at least they say 3 years of updates.
Yeah,
well, to the next operating system and everything else. So, and you don't have to wait. You know, right now, if you've got a phone that's not from Google, and Google puts out a new version of Android, you have to wait for the phone manufacturer
to
fiddle with it before they'll release it for that phone. Then the carrier has to fiddle with it before they'll release it on their network. Whereas with Google, it's just, we've introduced Android 9. Here
and
it comes.
There it is.
And
yep.
If you use one of the smaller carriers, you may never get the update.
That's exactly right.
One thing I loved about it, too. You know, every so often I'll wake up in the morning and, oh, it says restart my phone so the new update will take effect.
Yep.
Okay. Boop. Hit the restart while I go down and get coffee, and it's all automatically been updated. And
that happened to me this morning. I turned this Chromebook on at breakfast, and it up popped a little arrow that said, reboot, you've got an update.
Well, that's the one thing. Like I told you, up in my ham room, I got the two computers. The one Windows 7, and that just sits there and controls my radio. Whereas my Chromebook, I turned to look at that, and same thing. Oh, it did an update.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, you can restart. Yeah. I love it. You know, that is one of the best things that I ever got was that Chromebook. You know, not having to worry about the viruses and the spyware and everything else. It's like, yeah, no, I don't.
Yeah.
And Samsung has a delayed release of the Galaxy Fold.
There's a shock.
And asked everyone to give the samples back.
Right.
Because they were breaking.
Because they were breaking.
And that's a $2,000 phone.
Right. On the other hand, Motorola has been teasing a new Razr, which is a flip phone that's folded. It's a folded screen. So you flip it open. No, flip it open like the old Razrs. Flip it open and there's a screen.
Oh.
Right? Yeah,
It's almost like a miniature computer. You know, flip it open. Yeah. There's the screen, the keypad down
here. No, it's a full screen. It's now an Android phone. A full Android phone.
Get out of Dodge.
Yeah, well, the Galaxy opened up this way.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And it was broken in the middle. Yeah. Now,
this goes
Motorola
up,
and it'll be a full screen.
Hmm.
Right. So we'll see. We'll see.
You know, the one thing that I was sorry that never came to fruition was, remember they had the bracelets?
Yes.
And you were supposedly just tap it, and the screen would appear down on your arm.
Yep.
And you could sit there and do it, because I know they were sitting, would you be interested in something like that? And I was following it for the longest time, and then it just poof.
Yep. But now you could pull out a screen from there.
Yeah.
If you wanted to, you know, you could do. The problem is if you're wearing a long sleeve shirt or it's winter, or, you know.
Or your skin is a little darker than.
That was one of the problems that they had.
Yeah.
If you're wearing it this way and your arm is hairy.
Yeah.
Or tattoos.
Or you have tattoos. it was an issue. I told you, I want one that sits on the back of my hand and folds out like a fan. Yeah. That's what I want.
Or just a freestanding hologram.
A freestanding hologram. Or embedded in my eyeball so I can see what's going on.
The wife and I were talking about old TV programs and all that. And this takes me back to the old Dick Tracy days.
Dick Tracy.
And his watch. And they were sitting there saying how that was so ludicrous that nothing like that would happen.
Right, right. First it was, of course, the two-way wrist radio.
Yeah.
And then it was a two-way wrist TV.
Yeah.
And that was science fiction.
Yeah. It's, ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
He thought, oh, that would be cool if it ever happened. Now it's like, yeah, no big deal.
Right. Now we have that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
You can get watches with a camera in them and you can talk to people. And,
what are you going to do for me next?
Yeah, exactly.
Is what the society that we've come to now. One thing I did see, or was another side note, we're out to dinner. Just a couple nights ago, and I saw something really amazing. I saw this grandfather and a daughter sitting at this place, you know, having something to eat, and they were doing something that I haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah?
They were reading actual books.
Oh, nice.
No, you know, phone out or anything else. They're sitting there staring down at books.
Yep, yep.
I go, wow, I haven't seen that in a long time.
Yep. Yeah, my wife and I often, when we're done chit-chatting and we're still sitting at the table together, we'll get out our tablets, but in order to read, not to...
Yeah, but still, you're still... I don't care whether it's a hardcover book or
Kindle.
You're reading, not sitting there doing mindless texting and everything else. Because somebody commented about this and that, you know, actually...
Or two people texting each other while they're sitting at dinner.
I've seen it.
Well, just the contrary to that experience, another evening we're out, you see four folks sitting there at dinner, and, you know, the food's there, and all four of them are staring down at their phones, texting away. It's like, we've forgotten how to talk to each other.
Yes, yes, we have.
It is.
If you are a reader, by the way, and Steve, you should, I'm sorry, I know you're in the middle of a game, but you should put this up. It's called freebooksy.com.
Freebooksy?
Freebooksy. FreeBooksy.com. And they are free ebooks.
Ooh.
Every day, new free ebooks. Now, about 90% of them I couldn't care less about.
The Alien Chronicles.
Right. You know, that's more a young adult thing. But there's a young adult and mystery and romance and science fiction and everything. And like I said, most days there's nothing I particularly care for, but I look every single day because there's stuff for Kindle and Nooks and Apple and Google.
You know, donuts can be deadly and a sweet death. I don't know. I don't like those two next to each other.
Yeah, right. Right. But there's all kinds of books. And like I said, of course, it's the weekend. So there's not as big a selection. But there's free ebooks every single day. And of course, links to the idea is this has happened to me
e-books.
Twice now. The first book is free. It's like cocaine, mm-hmm. right? The first taste is free.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you're done with that book, up comes the next
another
book in the
one?
Series for $3.99. And then,
Gotcha.
I get that. But the fact is you can decide whether or not you like a series mm-hmm. by reading that first book for free.
Oh, okay.
And that's a good thing. And if you're as voracious a reader as am I, something like Free Booksy is a very cool deal. Steve's gonna put a link to that up in a moment.
Cool.
if you are a book lover, that's pretty cool.
Are they just for Kindle, or do they have audio?
I have not looked, as I don't do audiobooks in general. I don't think so.
I think this one looks like it's
just
electronic
e-books. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it's just e-books.
Because that's one thing I'm thinking of listening to more and more is audiobooks, because radio to me is just getting so, you know.
Yeah, I don't, except for this station, of course.
Yeah, well, this one I turn on for more clients.
Yeah.
They'll get in the car, you know, they're going to an appointment and that, you know, and they just want to relax. So that's one of my first buttons. You know, I throw it on jazz and they just sit back and, oh, I like this station. You know.
Yep. One thing I have to warn you about with eBooksy, these books are only free on the day that they're listed.
Gotcha.
Which means I think, I might be interested in that. And it's what's nice is you can say, I might be interested in that. So you download it. I've now got, and this is what I'm warning you about, I've now got about 50 books lined up in my various e-readers, because I have an Android phone. I can read Kindles and I can read Google stuff and Nook stuff and all the other formats on a different e-reader that comes with, that you can download for Android. And so I've got I got about 50 books in four or five different formats. Yep. That I can look through. All right, that music tells me you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. Don't go away, because we're going to be back for another hour of this stuff. Take a quick bio break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. And you lucky people, you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side, and may the 4th be with you.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Oh, that must be Soundbites right here on Jazz 90.1. And we have Art from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Art. What's up?
Hi. You having a discussion the last hour about ad blocking and trackers, and I thought I'd like to offer some input on that.
Sure.
I've been running some software called Pi-hole, P-I-H-O-L-E. It's intended to run on a Raspberry Pi, and essentially it has its own DNS server, and it blocks ads, and it cuts down on trackers.
Nice! Yeah, the Raspberry Pi is a very inexpensive but surprisingly powerful, certainly for the price, little device, and you can do all kinds of things with it. It runs various operating systems, including versions of Linux, and one of the things that it will run is a product called Pi-hole. And you're right, it's essentially a DNS. I thought it was a router, but maybe I guess it's a DNS. And
Everything.
It probably is everything.
It's actually both a DNS and a DHCP server.
There you go. And it can block a bunch of stuff. So that's a good thought. Of course, you have to, you got to learn to route your traffic through that and blah 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 blah. But it certainly is doable. It's not terribly difficult, and it's a good tip. Thanks, Art.
You bet. Good day.
Have fun. Yeah, Pi-hole is a pretty cool little product, actually. We've talked about the Raspberry Pi before, and it's specifically designed for blocking internet advertising, and it does an awfully good job. And again, this is one of those products where you can it's free, but you can certainly donate. And so if you're using it, I hope you're donating. You can also become a patron, and that's certainly a lovely doable thing. So think about it, and if you're going to use something like that, always, same thing I say with the Security Tango, is if you're going to do something like that, please.
Well, all the products that we recommend there, Super Anti-Spyware, the Malwarebytes, all those programs, hello, even though they're shareware, shouldn't be a leech and just, take it and run. Help support it, because that helps, like you and your stuff you do and all that, to keep this going. It doesn't happen for free, folks. It just doesn't.
Somebody pays somewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
Even the space to have it there.
That's exactly
right. The website and all that. That costs money. You don't get it for free.
Well, that's why I have a donate button on Soundbites.
Yeah.
we're storing, 11 years, I think it is, of archives up there. That ain't cheap. So we're doing that sort of thing.
Oh, that reminds me. I got to get a hold of Harry Legg.
Yes, you do.
And have him do up a new one for coming up on 30 years, folks.
Yes, we are.
30 years this Labor Day.
Yes,
not that
we
far
are.
Away, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already May. I hate to say it, but,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's...
Are we going to get spring yet?
It's, yeah. 29 years.
No, that was last week where you were gone on vacation.
Yeah. We had it.
That was it. Sorry, you missed it.
It's second winter now. It's,
Yeah.
My brother describes Rochester winter, or summers, as just 2 weeks of bad ice fishing.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It is construction season, so traditionally that's summer in Rochester.
Yeah, that's about it.
We've been on the air for 29 years, 8 months, and 1 day, so we got a few months left before our anniversary. And we're going to talk to Scott from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Scott. What's up?
Hey, Nick and guys. How you doing?
Peachy. How are you?
Oh, not bad. Several months ago, you were talking about if you had an old Chromebook and you couldn't get the OS to start up to make a rescue. I did it on a thumb drive.
Yeah.
So I've got that thumb drive here, and I decided I didn't want to use it for that. I want to repurpose it. So I'm looking at what I think are folders on the thumb drive, and I don't recognize the symbol. It looks like there's OEM and USB drive on there.
Right.
And I'm trying to delete everything, and I can't do it.
Right. You cannot just randomly delete stuff off of that thing. You have to reformat the entire drive.
Oh. I'm not sure I know how to do that with a Chrome operating system.
Oh, you're doing it on Chrome?
Well, I've got the thumb drive plugged into my Chromebook. And so I was trying to delete from there, and it just says an error occurred. Some items may not have been deleted, and nothing has. So you say I have to reformat?
Right. You have to reformat the drive, and there is a way to do it on a Chromebook.
Right-click on it in the Files Manager?
Right. There is, when you open up the Files Editor, you should see that USB drive, And yeah. you have, if you click on it, you get a couple of choices. You can either eject the device or format the device.
The only thing that is available is eject device. There's something else that I cannot read. It's grayed out, though.
And then maybe format the device. Do you the device you have it on, is it lockable? And did you lock it?
The Chromebook?
On the thumb drive.
Probably not. No, I didn't. No, I never do that. I mean, you know, the files are available. I can see them here. I can see the folders and the files here.
Right. No, it should allow you to. I'm quickly grabbing my own thumb drive and plugging it in here and looking at the files.
You could always erase it or reformat it on another computer. But
well, yes, that may be something that you may need to do at this point.
You know what? I only have two Chromebooks and that's all I've got. I have to find somebody with a Windows computer or something.
Yeah, that may be what's left to you to do. That was dumb. I just ejected it instead of.
No, you're yeah. Right. But don't
I
say okay on
the thumb drive is defective, and that could be a possibility, right?
I have seen thumb drives that, especially since I'm more in the Mac world, they want to be a Windows disk. They won't accept a Macintosh file system, which is very strange. It has to be FAT32. It won't let me change it.
That's weird.
Yeah.
But at any rate, if you were to go into My Files and right-click, the theory is you will see three choices: eject device, format device, and rename.
Well, all right. So I guess it's all the files. I can see My Files, Google Drive, and down below is USB.
Right, and if you right click on the USB drive.
Okay, can I? Let's see. All right, so I'm using two fingers on the pad and tapping with two fingers, and I come up with eject device, but that's all I can do.
That device is clearly locked, and I'm not sure.
Oh yeah, format device is grayed out.
Yeah, so you clearly locked it in some way, so you may need to maybe take it to a friend's house and
we'll see if there's a little switch on it somewhere that might lock the drive.
Right, and you may have flipped that accidentally.
Okay, all right, I'll give that a try.
But that's the only other thing I can think is it, you may have accidentally locked it, so I'm not quite sure what you do at that point. Of course, the good news is that thumb drives are cheap, so it's a few bucks, but let it sit aside in case you're Chromebook dies again, and then you've got, and then you just get a different one to actually use for other things.
Get one free in your cereal box.
Yeah, pretty much these days. Yeah.
Well, I don't see even a way to lock the thumb drive on mine.
All right. So I'm not entirely sure what happened. Was it plugged in when you turned your machine on?
What was the Chromebook plugged in?
Yeah, the thumb drive.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I didn't have the thumb drive in when I turned the Chromebook on. No, I didn't think that was a good idea considering the type of files it ran. I didn't know what it was going to do.
No, that's good. Okay, that was my question. So it wasn't that. So I'm not at this point exactly sure what happened.
Yeah.
So I guess the only thing
that's
I can truly suggest.
Well, try it on your other Chromebook and see if it'll let you format it.
Well, that's true. See if you can format it on the other Chromebook.
Neither one.
That format is dim on the other one, too?
Yeah. It may be that turning it into a recovery disk internally locks it. That's certainly possible.
Okay.
Makes it read-only, essentially. So it's either I've never looked that up, but I will. So my suggestion is either just set it aside or and use a different one or try it on a friend's not Chromebook.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you.
You too. Yeah, that's not something I had seen before.
Is there a deeper partition command? I've been reading a lot about G-Part this week.
Well, that's it'd be easier if he could take it over to, like you say, a friend's house and put it in there with a regular, say, Windows. And you go into the control panel of that. And
right. But if it's internally locked, it probably won't work there either. But yeah, G-Parted will, the GNU partition editor.
Or.
Will do all kinds of stuff. And it's possible that you could get to that if he had the right new Chromebook that also has Linux underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go into developer mode and you can turn on real Linux and play with it. But
sometimes it's not worth the frustration. Just go get another jump drive. They're so cheap.
That's not something I would ask a normal user to do.
Yeah. Well, that's where, like I say, and they're so cheap nowadays.
Time to breathe.
Thanks for reminding me. I've been holding my breath since noon.
A minute of deep breathing can help your focus.
Huh?
Yeah. All right, to the news while you all breathe deeply.
Do that other phone.
Breathe deep.
The other phone one?
Yeah, do the phone
one. Just to make you happy?
Yeah, please.
We'll do that one.
I've been waiting for that one.
1 month after launching the Galaxy Note 7 in August of 2016, Samsung was forced to suspend sales of the flagship phone when a manufacturing defect was discovered in its batteries that caused them to generate excessive heat and occasionally light on fire. That's why you've been waiting.
You usually don't want your phone to light on fire.
Yeah. Usually don't.
Usually.
What were we calling you at the time? Flamin' Dave Enright, I think it was?
Hot Pockets.
Hot Pockets Enright. That's right. After more problems were reported with the first batch of replacements, Samsung issued a second recall and ceased production of the Galaxy Note 7 altogether. The catastrophic episode resulted in the company implementing a new 8-step testing and inspection process for its batteries and all future devices.
Apparently the 7 steps previously weren't enough.
Were not enough. And
is it on
years-
fire? Step 8.
And in the years since, there haven't been any widespread issues of note. But even isolated cases are enough to set off alarm bells following the Note 7 debacle. This week, a South Korean Galaxy S10 5G owner posted photos of the phone scorched beyond recognition. He says that he hadn't done anything that would cause the S10 5G to combust, claiming it burned without reason. My phone was on the table when it started smelling burnt, and smoke soon engulfed the phone, the XS 5G owner said, who asked he asked to be identified by his last name, Lee. I had to drop it on the ground when I touched it because it was so hot. Lee then added that everything inside the phone was burnt. Samsung, unsurprisingly, refused to refund Lee for his ruined phone. Samsung said the damage to the phone was the result of an external impact, not an internal issue. Okay, a phone that bursts into flame when you drop it is still not a particularly safe phone. Details surrounding the incident are rather scant from both Samsung and Lee. So until more comes of it, it's hard to say whether or not the Galaxy S10 5G is actually problematic. That said, this is the first such burnt S10 5G we've heard of. So, are you hot for a Galaxy S10 5G? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, but in that story, they were saying that he wasn't denying what he had done as far as misuse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he said it didn't do anything. It was sitting on a table.
What was done before,
or
it was just sitting on the table.
Yeah.
Right. He did say he dropped it when he touched it because it was so hot, which I suspect that if there were smoke and flames coming out of it, it would be hot, and I would not have touched it, frankly. But okay, I might have knocked it off the table if it was a wood table, certainly, but... so who knows, but Samsung is not taking responsibility, and if indeed it is an isolated issue, then I guess, but the reality is that people are a little gun-shy of the Samsung Galaxy series.
Mm-hmm.
after the 7...
They're really a hot phone.
Yeah, it was a hot phone, and... I can just see, you know, back when the 7 problem started, airlines were refusing to let people who own them bring them on board and et cetera, et cetera. I hope that there's not a hysterical rush to do the same thing right now. One incident is a single data point is not a trend by any means. But we'll see if, in fact, over the next few weeks, more and more of them have a problem. But yeah, so if you own a Galaxy S10 5G, give us a call. 585-966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, it's always the tough call we end up having to do when we're servicing phones is it a manufactured defect or was it customer's accidental abuse? Because that can be two wildly different prices.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Then we joke about, what about intentional abuse?
Right.
Accidental abuse is not covered by warranty. But then on the other hand, all the battery training we get from Apple, if you drop a battery, it says dispose of it immediately and order a new battery.
Wow.
Because most of the time, what we're seeing in these phones is that the battery is just kind of loose gel packs.
Right.
There's no protective cover around it anymore because they're not user replaceable, so they don't have to be, you know, user resistant.
Also, there's another 1/100th of an ounce and quarter of an eighth of a millimeter
that they can make the battery bigger. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to accidentally puncture a battery like that because there's no protective shell around it. And so when we're replacing batteries in computers and phones, there's a battery guard you're supposed to put on it while you're working on the phone. And if you drop it, you're not supposed to use it again because that impact can dent the cell, which then can mess up the internal anodes and cathodes and short it out,
mm-hmm.
Which can lead to overheating and a runaway thermal event that to the external appearance looks like it caught on fire. But it caught on fire because of that impact event.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And
well, that's
rough.
That's one thing. And I don't care whether it's the Mac phones or any of the phones. It's ridiculous that these manufacturers keep trying to get them thinner and thinner.
Right.
Yeah, most people surveyed wouldn't mind if they were a little thicker as long as the battery was lasted longer.
You're talking millimeters. We've discussed this before. So it's 3 millimeters mm-hmm. smaller, in thickness. Heck, you put the Frogger cases on them and they make them bulky anyways. The key thing to most individuals is, no matter what phone it is getting some type of case on it so that if you happen to drop it, which... Not as if you're going to, it's just when you're going to drop it.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
That it's not going to shatter the screen. The number of folks that I see going around that, didn't bother to put a protective case on there, and the screens have more cracks in it.
And mm-hmm. it costs so much to replace the screen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
That, for that little bit of thinness, it was worth it?
So they're trying to make the glass less shatter...
resistant.
More shatter resistant.
Right.
But there's an interesting dilemma with glass, is you can make it impact resistant or shatter resistant.
But not both.
But not both.
Both, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, Corning is doing their best.
Yep.
They've come a long ways.
Brand, yeah.
But still in all, to slim down the phone for the sake of losing battery power... No.
Well, it's the bragging rights now on the spec sheet. You got 16 different phones you're looking at. Well, this one's a hair thinner.
Yeah, but I'd rather see them go the other way. That instead of worrying about, it's 3 millimeters smaller, this thing will last 3 days without recharging.
And these days, it's more like 0.5 millimeter smaller.
Yeah.
And it does. It eventually gets ridiculous since, many of us are getting to the point now where...
our arms aren't long enough.
Well, our arms aren't long enough. But also, we want to know we've got a solid hold on our phones.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if they're super slender and they have the glass back and all the other horse manure, people saying, well, one of the big differences between the Pixel 3 and the Pixel 3A is the Pixel 3 has that beautiful glass back and the 3A is going to have a cheap plastic back. Give me the cheap plastic back. It's easier and more secure to hold it.
New phrase I heard, DWI.
Yeah?
Deal with it.
Yeah, deal with it.
Well, Energizer is coming out with a smartphone that has an 18,000 milliamp hour battery. Most of us would call that 18 amp hours.
Right.
but it's huge, and it's all battery.
Yeah, I think they didn't get their. I think they didn't make their Kickstarter.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing, though, is they've got to start worrying about getting the batteries to last longer. And the reason I say this is more of us are going to our phones, our tablets, and our laptops for streaming of TVs, movies, mm-hmm. and everything else, social media, that we need the longer battery life.
And phones are getting bigger, so laptops are tablets. Because phones are getting bigger, the tablet sizes, a small tablet doesn't make any sense anymore because your phone is a small tablet now.
Right.
Yeah. But to sit there and stream a movie and, you know, because everybody's cutting the cord and not be able to have a battery that's going to kill your phone because, you know, you watched maybe an hour or two of this movie or that.
Well, you're right. People are on their phones all day long. And that's why you see, you know, if you go to an airport, it used to be people were sitting in the seats all over the place. Now they're all gathered around the few connectors.
I'm dying. You seen that commercial? I'm dying. And shove someone out of the way to plug in. Oh, I'm dying too.
Yeah, right. The new Pixel 3a is supposed to have a 300 milliamp hour battery, which is about 100 milliamp hours long, bigger than the Pixel 3. The idea is that you're right. People do everything on their phones now.
It's become the way of the future. You know, I mean, everybody's cutting the cord. I mean, you know, you don't have home phones anymore. Everybody's got their own phones and they're watching TV, catching up on programs, emailing people. You know, everything is just...
Let's be honest, it's playing games.
And that too. I mean, that's just... another thing that, you know, you can add to it.
I was out with a bunch of people we had Rochester Google this week, which I forgot to talk about last week. And we were talking about actors and what movies they've been in. Five people whipped out their phones, got on IMDb, yep. And, you know, we were talking back. Oh, this was in this one. Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember that one. He was in with this one.
And where do I know him from?
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's not uncommon. You know, somebody's got a question. Oh, I don't remember what that was. Somebody pulls out their phone.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. You can't have any bar trivia contests anymore.
That's the truth.
Or you have to ban phones.
Yeah. Or you have to have a time limit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's just so easy to, you know, pull up your phone and find out the information. Yep.
We had a customer in this morning that was having trouble buying an in-app purchase on her phone. They wanted to put $100 in their gambling game, and
no, don't pay real money for a fake game money. I guess, you know, whatever yeah. You do. Listen, we're gonna take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ramey, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we had a text message. And the person said they can't get Gmail to work with Thunderbird under Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what error message you got, but there isn't anything you're supposed to need to do.
Yeah.
Special.
It just happens automatically.
And you shouldn't need to turn on less secure apps.
You really shouldn't need to turn that on ever. You should turn that off immediately.
Yeah.
But what happens is when you put in it depends, in general, whether you say, you know, fred@gmail.com or fred@fred.com and it's a Gmail account, I've done both on Windows 10 and it automatically comes back and says, oh, this is a Gmail account. Here's all the stuff you have to have. And it puts it in for you, and then you just have to have the right password.
Well, if he's running Windows, why not just use the Chrome browser?
Well, Thunderbird is much more convenient for a lot of things that you do directly. Thunderbird is and the new, but here's a caveat: you must be using the newest version of Thunderbird. So if we don't have them to talk to, or her or them or however many people
person.
There are there. So the idea is you need the latest version of Thunderbird. Once you put in your username, which is your email address, so fred@gmail.com, it should come back and say, oh, okay, it's imap.gmail.com and requires SSL, yes, and port 993 and all that other stuff. And then you just say, okay, and then it asks you for your password, or you might have to click get mail, and then it asks you for your password, you put that in. You're done. And then you say, send a message, and you do that right away because, again, it's going to ask you for your password. And since it's in your head right now because you just put it in to get your mail, you put it in again and mail goes out and you're good from then on. But unless you're doing something specifically funky or unless you're not using the latest version of Thunderbird, it should work just perfectly.
Now, there was, a couple of years ago, there was a plan to discontinue Thunderbird.
Yes, and they actually stopped, but now there's a group of people who have picked it up and made it completely open source. Mozilla, in fact, is supporting them.
And I'm just reading their latest blog entry, and they're adding 12 new engineers on the team.
Right.
So it's not being discontinued anymore.
It certainly is not.
What advantages that got over Gmail?
There's a bunch of different things that you can do, one of which is, of course, multiple emails in the same place. So I've got a dozen different emails.
From different services.
Yeah. Right, from different services. I've got a dozen different email things, and I've just gotten
so spoiled with Gmail.
That's... Right. A lot of people don't like the Gmail interface. They think it's very crowded and very ugly. And you can set up Gmail or Thunderbird to do a bunch of different things, all kinds of automated thises and thatses that you can do and things like this. So if you do those things, Thunderbird is a
different
nice alternative
for different folks.
Exactly right. But honestly,
and I've been using Thunderbird for 20 years.
And I've been using Thunderbird for 20 years.
I used it for decades myself. I it's just that I got hooked on Gmail, which made it so much easier because it doesn't matter where I am.
Right.
You know, I can get to my Gmail account.
Right. I use Gmail here on my Chromebook, but when I'm sitting at my Linux box, I'm using Thunderbird. Mm. And my beloved bride got very upset when Eudora was canceled.
Yeah.
You have no idea how upset she got when Eudora was canceled.
A lot of people were.
Oh, yeah.
But luckily, I was able to move her to Thunderbird, which was close enough.
Mm-hmm. Some people are still using it. It mostly works.
Mostly works. But Thunderbird, like Steve just said, is actively being managed and upgraded and everything else. So you definitely, if you're still using Eudora, it might just be time to move over to Thunderbird. But I'm sorry, text back or call us and let us know exactly what's going on. But theoretically, honestly, if you're using the latest, and I just set it up last week, so for my wife on her new Windows 10 box, and it really was as simple as here's her email address, and her email address isn't even at gmail.com, but it's Gmail, and it picked that up.
Yep.
And said, oh, you got this stuff. Okay, are we good? Yeah, we're good. Here's your password. Go. Everybody wins. And it was pretty easy. So I'm not quite sure what you're doing, but I have to suspect you're not using the latest version of Thunderbird because that would be the thing that does it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul. Sorry?
The latest Thunderbird is 60.6.1, released on March 25th. So that's pretty latest.
Yeah. Our next caller is Paul from Rochester. Oh, no, Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Paul. What's up?
Yeah, good afternoon. I know this is a computer show. You know, we do use the phones a lot, and we're getting a lot of these calls where the caller ID indicates the phone number and location. Is that issued by the caller or by the phone company? Because a lot of them are fake, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
How does that, where does it originate from? In other words, is that being provided by the phone company or the cellular company or by the person who's making the call? Do they have some method for faking the caller ID?
Well, there are programs that will let you spoof an ID.
In general, it's created by the sender's phone company. But because you can do telephony over the internet, voice over IP, you can create fake call IDs. And so that's becoming a big problem now, especially for the fake tech support. The call ID will say Apple or will say Microsoft or something like that.
Right. So to be clear before you go on, to be clear, if they are calling from a regular phone on a carrier, then it is the carrier who sends out the caller ID.
The sending carrier, and then
example, if I call you, I'm on Verizon. Verizon sends the caller ID to you. But if I'm on VoIP, the voice over IP, where it's all an internet phone, that can be easily spoofed. So go ahead.
Yeah, and then so the receiving end reads that call ID that the other end sent, and there's international and cross company agreements for the protocol of call ID. The problem is there's no security in the call ID protocols, which is why it's easy to spoof call ID. It's illegal. But it's easy to do, so the bad guys are already breaking the law, so what do they care if they break another one?
But is the technology available to the carriers and the phone companies to screen this, to prevent this from...
Well, yes and no. The reality is that the receiving phone company has to take the word of the other end.
Is the other end another phone company, or is it...
Well, that's the point. If it's another phone company, then what you're getting is the real ID. If it's a voice over IP phone, like you're using, what are some of the names of them? Well, Vonage, those.
Well, even the Spectrum phone is voice over IP.
Right.
Yeah.
So with those, using the right software, you can spoof the CNAME, the calling name. It's just a field in the header that gets sent with the phone call. And it's easy enough to spoof on a voice over IP phone.
Now, the FCC is proposing new protocols with security involved that will make it much, much harder to spoof call ID and cut down on the number of robocalls. So they are looking into trying to fix this.
The problem with that is that it's an all or nothing solution. Either everybody does it at once, or it doesn't work.
Right. And that's called a downgrade attack, and it's common now.
Right.
So if all the major carriers support call ID authentication, you know, the bad guy on his voice over IP just says, "Oh, I don't support that." And the other end says, "Oh, okay, we'll have to
ignore it for now.
Ignore it for now, and we'll complete your call as you want it."
Right. And so what they have to do is say, "We will not ignore caller ID verification."
I get almost literally. I'm not exaggerating. 10 or more of these every day.
Yeah, I doubt it. One of the things you can do, there's software you can run on your phone. If you had a Google phone, it would be automatic. They do that. Google does that automatically.
There are pay services where you can use it on landlines.
Right. So they exist, but they're either... limited to specific phones like the Pixel phones from Google, or you have to pay for them.
And so what a lot of people have done is just we've gotten used to not answering the phone. Don't trust the call ID. Don't answer the phone unless you recognize the number. But even then, that's not for
if
sure.
It doesn't show up in my contact list, that's why I've got voicemail.
And I'm with you. I used to get 10 a day, 15 a day, 20 a day. Now I get a few a week.
Yeah.
Because I now have a Google phone. But even so, sometimes it comes from a 585 area code whatever. I used to get phone calls from my number. Pretty sure it wasn't me.
Yeah. work, we have a harder problem because we get calls from unknown people. So we have to answer every call from a business standpoint. And so now if we get one of these fake calls, we won't hang up so that it blocks them from calling somebody else for a few minutes.
And make sure when if you do get one of these calls, never say the word yes.
No.
Yeah.
Right.
It's always, how can I help you?
How can I help you? Yeah. We've had a couple of people that got pulled into these scams. When they try to deny the charge with their credit card company, the scammer will say, well, here's a contract he signed, in air quotes, and they just use a script font and type the person's name in a script font. Yeah. And saying, and so that's proof that he signed it, and so don't reverse the charges.
Or they record you saying yes, and splice it onto, do you accept our service?
Yep. And it used to be the fake services, especially fake tech support, were a little easier to refute because it was, $100, $300 was the more common ones, to clean viruses. And, well, they didn't clean the viruses to get the money. But now, it's $300 for a six-month contract. You can call us anytime. That's harder to dispute from the other end because it's not a service you didn't get. It's an ongoing service that you could get if you wanted
and
to.
And use.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you're right. Doing me much help at this point.
Well, and the major cell phone companies and even several of the voice over IP companies are working on this technology, but there's always going to be bad guys that are going to be able to, find some way around it.
Right.
Well, it's rendering the telecommunications business unusable at this point.
Well, and they understand that, and that's why they're working to fix it, but it is not an easy solution.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the FCC website, they even have the letter that the chairman sent to the carrier, and they have some of the replies from the carriers. I can't get the reply to open at the moment. But, so they are working on some way to combat call ID spoofing. It used to be when not everyone had call ID, it wasn't that big of a problem. And now it's built into every smartphone. Even, the cheap $5 phones you get at the big box store, if you want a landline, still has call ID on it now.
Right.
All right. We did have somebody reply back. Firefox evidently screwed up and broke almost all extensions.
I hadn't read that. I don't use Firefox for much of anything anymore.
Who does?
It's it's almost common that every time a major version of Firefox comes out, old extensions can break.
Mm-hmm.
But what may have happened, I haven't read lately. Too.
Oh yeah, they had a technical glitch. Oh yeah, this is today. This is actually yesterday at this point.
A certificate expired.
Yeah, a certificate expired, and it screwed things up. A fix is out, however, so. Theoretically, there will be an update shortly, or it's already out, and you should be able to update and fix everything. But yeah, apparently one of their things expired. What name is this?
Jenna.
Jenna. Our next caller is Jenna from Webster, New York. Hi, Jenna. What's up?
Not much. How are you?
Peachy.
Yeah, I got a funny story to end your weekend out. I had a Domino's charge on my credit card account.
We were talking to Jenna, and all of a sudden another person was suddenly there. I'm not sure what happened there.
Yeah. No.
What happened there?
We lost him.
Well, yeah.
I don't know what happened.
Sorry
two people
that.
were in the same phone call. I don't know. I used to get that with party lines.
Yeah.
I'm old enough to remember party lines.
And you had to pay extra to get a single line.
Yes, you did.
And now we pay extra to get a party line.
The problem that we had two problems.
Give us a call back, Jenna. We'll try to get you back in.
There were these two, at the time, of course, I was 10 years old. I thought them as older ladies, who spoke for hours to each other. And that kept our phones always busy. And then we were one number off from a local convent. So we, we'd get a call, and my father would answer the phone saying, "Hello, and, is this a such and so convent?" And every once in a while, he'd just say, "Yep,
Sister Mary here."
what happened was we particularly on snow days, we get calls, 50, 60 calls. Is school closed?
Mm-hmm.
So I took to when I got up, if it was a snow day, and of course this is before, you had 500 channels that told you everything, I'd call the convent myself and ask if it was a snow day. And then I would tell people when they called. It was easier. It was faster than saying you've got the wrong number and blah, because half the time they'd call back misdialing again.
Yeah. If you hit redial, you're going to get the same wrong number again.
What redial? We had
that's true. Rotary phones. Yeah.
So I would just remember it. I would just find it out and then answer. And they say, you know, and I'd say hello, and they'd say, is school closed? Nope.
Yep. Our phone number when I was a kid was one digit off of the high school, so we'd get a lot of calls from them too.
Yeah.
And we were in close proximity to the high school also. I don't know if that mattered any.
It back in the day it did because they handed them out
sequentially.
You know, right. But nowadays, of course, you get a Google phone number. You can get it pretty much anywhere in the country, if not the world these days. So. I'm not sure what happened with Jenna. Jenna, please call back. I'm not sure quite what happened there.
We're running out of time, though, too.
Oh, yeah. We're almost done.
Yeah, we're coming down to the end of the show.
Yeah.
And that was a little goofy anyways.
I'm not sure quite what happened there. I was hearing two separate voices, so I'm not sure what happened.
Two extra voices in your head?
Yes. You'd think there would be enough room in there for another voice or two. Cheese and crackers. But, yes, there apparently was. I should let you know the last big news item is Mac fans who are hoping for new hardware this year and getting one possible explanation for the delay, and some hope that 2019 will see some updates. Tucked into the notes from Tim Cook and Luca Maestri that were included with Apple's quarterly earnings were a few choice remarks directed at Intel. Intel was lined up to supply the iPhone family with 5G modems, but as we all know, that part of the relationship has ended rather abruptly. It's not their only relationship with Apple. Anyone with a modern Mac will realize that Intel still plays a part in Apple's desk-bound computing hardware. And it's here that Cook and Maestri decided to link the delay of the new MacBook to Intel. First up, Maestri highlighted a lack of supply. He said, "Next, I'd like to talk about the Mac. Revenue was $5.5 billion compared to $5.8 billion a year ago, with the decline driven primarily by processor constraints on certain popular models." And Tim Cook then said, "For our Mac business overall, we faced some processor constraints in the March quarter, leading to a 5% revenue decline." And he said he believed that Mac revenue would have been up compared to last year without those constraints, and they don't believe this challenge will have a significant impact on their third quarter results. But it's very clear that they have had problems. Intel, of course, has updated their ninth generation core CPUs, the Coffee Lake Refresh, and it will continue to use Intel's 14 nanometer process, but it will support up to 8 cores, but it's not going to be the 10 nanometer process that everybody wants, and yada, yada, yada. So we don't know what we're going to see at WWDC this year. It may be that Mac OS will look to start supporting AMD chips or whatever, or their own Apple designed ARM processors.
Yeah.
ARM processors. Yeah, exactly. So if you've been waiting for a new MacBook Pro, it may not be happening anytime soon.
But we just got new ones last July. That'll be a year ago.
A year ago, for Pete's sake. That's not new anymore.
It's the Mac Pro, the tower that we're really expecting that 2 years ago they said was coming.
Right. And still isn't here. All right, well, that music tells me... What the heck just happened there? That music tells me that we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I apologize to Jenna. Not sure what happened in the last call. But call in earlier next week, and we can get things more easily straightened out. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 55 minutes after the hour. You've wasted 2 hours of your life listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.